friends, welcome once again to another episode of the Perfect Bound Podcast, brought to you by The Panel Jumper and Comics Dungeon. We are a podcast all about anything and everything comics and comics related. This is episode 10. Thank you for joining us. I'm here, as always, with Cole Hornaday. Say hello, Cole.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
And Chris Casso.
Hello.
My name is Ben Lawrence, if I haven't mentioned that yet. And first off, I want to talk about that Star Wars trailer. We just made Nicole watch it because she hadn't seen it yet. What did y'all think of that Star Wars trailer?
It's awesome.
Yes, it is fantastic.
I thought it was great.
Everybody's super pumped. The public reaction to this has just been off the charts positive. And I think a big part of that has to do with the fact that we see Han Solo and Chewbacca at the very end. Now, I have a theory about this, and I hope I'm wrong. My theory, so we've seen the Millennium Falcon flying around in both trailers. So we know the Millennium Falcon at least is a character spaceship. Now, at the very end of the trailer, Han and Chewie walk into what I'm assuming is inside the Millennium Falcon, and they say, we're home. I'm afraid that we're going to go through the entire movie. We're not going to see Han and Chewie at all. They're going to be in the very final scene. Chewie, we're home. Bam! Lucasfilm.
Yeah, I could see that happening.
No, actually, no. I see it the other way around. I think it's going to be a torch passing kind of story where we have the old guard, we have all the old folks, and we say goodbye to them maybe even a quarter of the way into the movie, but definitely by the end so all the younger characters can take over.
Right.
I don't think that they would actually be so unkind as to, hold off Han and Chewie to the end. But, it does kind of make you wonder, because that moment has some type of a triumphant return aspect to it that would be silly to have early on the movie.
Right. Maybe midway point,
Maybe J.J. Abrams will pull a Joss Whedon, and right after Han says, Chewie, we're home, he's shot by a stormtrooper.
Yeah. That would be awful.
A Star Destroyer just rams through his chest. Yeah.
All right. And also, something else I just want to briefly mention. We're going to be talking about Daredevil later on in another episode, but I just want to talk about that fight scene that everybody's talking about. Do we all know what I'm talking about? This one-shot fight scene?
Mm-hmm. It's taken from Old Boy.
Yeah. And
Is it an homage to Old Boy?
Yep.
I did not realize that.
Yeah. You should actually go and look at the Old Boy fight sequence. It is phenomenal. Yeah,
they just changed the angle.
Yeah. See, so this is how I look at it.
It's been so long since I've seen Old Boy.
In Old Boy, it's like a side-scroller video game, right? Yeah. You see the cameras on one, like they took away the one part of the hallway, and it's basically just back and forth, and this guy's just kicking ass. In Daredevil, it's more of a 3D camera move. So I'm looking at it like Old Boy is the Super Mario Brothers, and the Daredevil fight scene is the Mario 64, where you actually have 3D control. Nice. It's pretty fantastic. And they did that on one take, which is phenomenal. And they also did it in one day, which is what I read. And for somebody who has actually tried to choreograph a fight scene before, check out The Panel Jumper issue 3. Man, I can't believe them doing that in one day.
But what I loved about, if I could just share what I've only gotten to episode 5 by this point, and because I am actually kind of savoring them. I don't want to binge on them because I am thoroughly enjoying them. And people on my Facebook page kept talking about that fight sequence, the hallway sequence. And when it was done, I was like, was that what everybody was talking about? Because it was good, but I'm afraid that I was expecting more. But, no, hold on.
You're such a buzzkill.
No, I'm not. Because the more I thought about how exquisitely choreographed it was, what I was thinking about was the drama inherent in the scene. Because I was thinking about why that had so much power, not because of the fight choreography, but because you've seen how badly he's been beaten up into that scene.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts.
And then I started thinking about the gravitas of that scene and how totally worn down to the nub he is. Yep. And I started thinking about what type of a dramatic impact it had. And that was it wasn't just a fight scene. There was a story going on in there. It was character building moment in the story. So.
And yeah, you can tell that they were all exhausted at the very end.
Sure,
really. Even though it did play into the scene, in a character moment, I'm looking at that going, those actors are exhausted. They need a break.
Right. See, that's one of the things I did binge watch it. And one of the things I love about the whole show is that Matt's getting his butt kicked continually and he's not recovering. Mm-hmm. Like, next day he's like, oh, this really hurts just jumping down on the floor right now. Mm-hmm. Whereas you go watch some other shows like Arrow and it's just like, he's good to go. You know, they do like time jumps, but the series for Daredevil is so tight on like the development of all these events that I just really love that like he does have a normal physique and that he's getting hurt and it's maintaining that pain throughout it. So yeah, no, I really enjoyed the whole run.
Cool, and we'll be talking more about Daredevil and Arrow in a future episode, a very close future episode, two episodes from now. Look for it. So, another we're kind of sticking to movies and TV shows. Let's keep on that track and talk about Avengers Part 2. Andy Serkis confirmed that his character is indeed Ulysses Klaue, which indicates that there might be a black. Actually, no, I think Stan Lee said that the Black Panther movie's in the works.
Yeah, well, there's
scheduled.
A date confirmed. Yeah,
scheduled, yeah.
It's 2 years, 3 years from now.
Yeah,
it's very far out.
And you had stated, Chris, that it has to happen sooner. Was there?
Yes.
What was the impetus behind that statement?
So a couple reasons. Okay. One key one is we need representation.
Okay.
It's the impact of having the Falcon show up in Captain America has been so beneficial. And we have a customer who we've known him for a long time, and he his two boys have, you know, were growing up, and he said it's very important that they saw a character like Static on television because his children would be like, Dad, it's someone like us. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, that means so much. And I've had other people like mention that about like the Falcon, and he's just awesome. So I want a hero who's not just a sidekick or Tony Stark's best buddy or something, somebody who's like the vehicle for the whole movie. Mm-hmm. And Black Panther's pretty freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Do you think it's going to diminish the impact of that representation by having to wait that long? See, and you guys can catch me on this or not. My concern is that at some point we're going to lose this forward momentum of awesomeness,
right?
You know, and that maybe even 2-3 years down the line, these films are not going to have the same impact on our popular consciousness as they are having right now.
Yeah.
And I agree with you that we need that type of representation for women and people of color and different marginalized cultures now, before that pop culture. That pop culture trend crests. I mean, Nicole, what do you think?
Well, like the Captain Marvel thing is a good example of what you're saying, because the Carol Corps is so huge right now that to have a Captain Marvel movie now would be extraordinary. But again, that's also something that we're waiting many years for. So I definitely see your point in that. And I just want it because I want it. I just think that it's so important, and I like Black Panther. It's just like, I don't know why I like Galactus, but I do. It's like Black Panther is just like, I want to see him. I want to see Wakanda. I just think it would be really great and a new thing besides just, you know, a bunch of funny white guys.
Can we speculate for half a second of what that story will be about, that Black Panther story?
God, I hope it's a good Wakanda story, too.
I mean, like, you're talking about, like, the Christopher Priest stuff or the Hudlin stuff, because I never read any of that.
I'm not a fan of the Hudlin stuff.
Fun of the Hudlin.
I love the Christopher Priest run so much that everything paled in comparison.
Now, he also wrote Quantum and Woody, right?
He did.
Yeah, okay. I was a fan of his Quantum and Woody, to be sure.
And the thing is, it felt like when Hudlin took over, Marvel swept Priest under like the carpet. They're like, who cares about this? And a lot of the stuff after that contradicted everything he developed.
Oh.
And it's just like, well, why would you do such a thing? Like, they made a really big deal, like when they relaunched Black Panther after him. Mm-hmm. They launched it during Black History Month. Mm. And they're like, hey, we got, like, you know, the president of the BET writing this. Like, everybody pay attention.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yeah, but Christopher Priest is also African-American. He was an editor, and someone credited him as, like, the first African-American solo writer at Marvel. So it's just like, let's respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And everything he did in that run was, for me, amazing. And it was about showing different representations and how other people viewed the Black Panther, and also like his own story and Wakanda and everything. And so it just was really sad for me that when Hudlin kind of ignored stuff, and he also did some dumb things with Storm that always bugged me. So yeah, I just want to see them really, like, because the idea of there's this hidden African nation that is like so much more powerful than anything else in the world, but they don't want to interact with anybody else because everybody else sucks. Mm-hmm. It's great to me. And,
yes.
And then like trying to get into like the culture of what he stands for, mm-hmm. and like they added different elements. Like Hickman's added some new stuff too. That's mm-hmm. pretty awesome. So it's just like there's a lot of mythology that you can add to the Marvel Universe,
right.
that doesn't take away from anybody else.
And like with the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff, where you're seeing this underground, you're seeing this kind of like guerrilla warfare stuff, having the Wakanda secret city would really play into that and really give people something like, what?
Yeah.
You know?
We'll get some of like the Wakandan secret guard that used to protect him, like join up with the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys. It'd be just really awesome. And it can turn into some really cool like espionage stories, mm-hmm. because there's a great element that Geoff Johns introduced in his run of the Avengers that no one remembers because he got fired after like a year. But the best thing that he did was that he made it a point, both him and Christopher Priest, that Black Panther is the Batman of the Marvel Universe. He's the guy who plans for everything and is smarter than everyone else. And he's the leader of a nation. He views mm-hmm. things from that level, not mm-hmm. as, I'm going to go punch some guys. So they introduced this concept of Wakanda was looking at America and it's like, hey, you got a lot of superpower people over there. And you got a big green guy smashing stuff, and we're kind of nervous. So Black Panther joined the Avengers to keep it tabs on them.
Ooh, so that actually would play into the movie quite well.
He's a mole.
And basically, like, everybody got mad at him. He's just like, you guys can blow up my country with a pinky, so screw you. And Tony Stark specifically, who should never, ever mention this stuff to anybody, was being a real douche to him. He's just like, you know, you can't treat me like a pawn. And Black Panther was just like, you're my knight. And so like he played everybody, but because he's so good in a good way.
And that was something that you can find the article on that we're kind of referencing on the Panel Jumper Facebook page that kind of covered Christopher Priest's run on the book. And one thing that they pointed out in the article was that, you know, T'Challa is more of a world. He's a nation leader. He's more like Prince Namor or Doctor Doom than he is like Tony Stark or Captain America. I mean, he's Machiavellian in his choices, which makes him a far more complex character that, frankly, I've never seen. And if I had opportunity to read those kind of stories about that kind of character, I would be a great big fan.
And they're out of print because Marvel and everybody else apparently doesn't care about Christopher Priest. Yeah, there's one specific issue that's like the most amazing issue where he holds a meeting between Doctor Doom, Magneto, and Namor, who all had countries at the time, and they just sat down at a table and they were polite to each other and they're like, we're the heads of nations, so screw Reed Richards, screw Tony Stark, like we know what we're talking about. And it was a very intelligently written series. I miss that because the Hudlin run kind of went more into super action stuff, focused a lot on his getting married with Storm, and there's elements of the stories that I liked, but again, like, there was apparently no editor keeping track of a lot of things, so that always threw me off. Because there's one sequence where he takes Storm to the blue area of the moon, which is where like the most famous X-Men story ever took place, the Death of Phoenix. And he's telling Storm like, hey, yeah, this is the blue area of the moon and you could breathe here. And she's just like, uh-huh, oh, I didn't know that. And it's just like,
wait, what?
She knows that.
Like, she should have. Error.
Maybe she was just trying to be nice.
Yes, that's the best way I would have accepted it. If she was just like, honey, I know. Yeah.
She like, you know, like you do that thing like when you're on a date and your date tries to impress you by telling you something you already know. Yeah. You're like, oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah. That's how I should read that run. But yeah, I want to see a lot of that stuff show up in the cinematic world.
Excellent.
Because it just adds a more political turn on everything. They're not existing in a vacuum, you know?
Mm-hmm. And well, and also, like, too, they're heading towards Civil War, right?
Yeah.
So that would also, having Black Panther and having a lot of that
should be
playing into it would also deepen it.
Yep.
Yeah, in the Marvel universe, in the cinematic universe.
So yeah, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I think I read something that it's programmed out to like 2025. They know exactly what they're going to be releasing.
So above all, we have to make sure we stay alive just to watch these movies.
Yes.
So you're saying there's been more editorial control exercised over the films than there ever has been in the print universe.
Oh, yeah.
especially over Marvel events.
Have you ever read the X-Men?
Of course I read the X-Men. Hey, how old am I?
That's a great lead-in to the next topic that we're going to be talking about. There's this BusinessInsider.com article that says Disney is very purposefully ignoring the X-Men because Fox owns the cinema rights to X-Men. And so why is Disney going to put time and energy, because Disney owns Marvel, why are they going to put time and energy into creating X-Men titles when they don't get a cut of the movies? Yeah. And I think in this article, an executive from Disney just said point blank to a fan, if you have something and you put all your time and energy into it and you make 100% of the profits versus something else that you put all your time, you put the exact same amount of time and energy into, but you make a lesser percentage of the profits, what are you going to focus on most?
Yep. Yeah.
What did you just, how did you describe it earlier? Is the market,
so a lot of people, like the article itself says it's a conspiracy. And to me, it's just like, no, it's a free market in action. It's not censorship of any type. People throwing that word around like crazy.
But I would call it a chilling effect, though.
Did you actually mention what article you're referring to? I don't know. Did you say that?
You can find it on the Panel Jumper Facebook page.
You can find it on the Perfect Bound podcast Facebook page. It's actually from businessinsider.com.
Yeah.
It's on both.
Yeah. You can find it in either. Thanks, Ben and Cole.
I will post the link to the article in the show notes if you want to read along.
Just do a Google search for X-Men Inhuman Panic Attack on the internet.
But that's the thing. It doesn't sound like a conspiracy to me. It sounds like they're being very upfront about what they're doing.
And frankly, I'm done with the X-Men being so oversaturated.
I'm okay with it because as I was reading the article, I was thinking about the glut of the X-glut we've suffered under for 20 plus years.
Yeah. Wolverine's like on 20 teams. There's even one great issue of X-Men where like they were remaking teams and everybody went to Cyclops' room to complain and he's in the center saying like, I appreciate your confidence. No. And it's just like, thank God he's dead. You know, I mean, he'll be back. We all know he'll be back. There will be more X-Factor and X-Force and Ecstatics and Extreme X-Men. But it's just like...
Exciting. Yeah. But, well, there was a time where there was like 15 X titles on the market. And I gave up because at one time I tried to... I was a friend of the X-Men.
I'm sorry.
I tried to keep... That I was part of the... It was very painful, especially to my pocketbook.
Did all of these X-Men titles take place in the same universe?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. So, what are you talking about?
Okay, well, X-Men, hold on, is convoluted.
We're talking about time travel and alternate reality.
Well, see, that was...
Time
travel. You know, that was the one wrinkle that Chris Claremont... is it his fault? I mean,
it's always
always. Let's always blame it on Chris Claremont. Let's blame
hopefully
all the,
he's not the, listening.
Inappropriate BDSM imagery. Let's blame it all on Chris Claremont.
Yeah.
The pseudo empowerment of women. That's really not
dangling plot lines till the end of time. There's actually a term for that. I can't remember what it is. I should have googled.
Is it Claremontism?
The Claremont.
I think it's basically like that.
It's
basically
like a fancy hotel.
Yeah.
Because basically it's like he actually had it to the point where he never wanted to finish a storyline. He's like, 10 years from now, I'll come back to that. He's like, don't do that.
And see, that's my theory of why we're going to go off in the weeds for half a second here. Yes. Bear with me. But that's my theory why the TV show Heroes failed so miserably. In its second season, is someone, so one of the execs at the network said, do it like the X-Men. And someone sat down and tried to do it like the X-Men, and they came up with all this, they turned the plot lines into time-traveling Swiss cheese.
Well, to jump into that, too, it's because they didn't have any freaking writers because they all went on strike that season.
Oh, well, so that's apples and oranges.
They must have given the janitor the X-Men comics and told him to write them.
You know, I forget about that. I mean, can we really blame the collapse of all those shows on that? I mean, is it?
No,
yeah,
I don't care.
All right.
Is Heroes
like my,
a thing?
You're the true historian. I like my conspiracy theories. Together, we make a lovely sandwich.
There you go.
And they fight crime on the mean streets of Gotham.
Booyah! Anyway, so...
So it's a good thing that we're not seeing as much X-Men.
I'm not going to cry any tears
on the panel.
There has really been lots of X-Men.
The flip over is the Inhumans. Now, on the negative side of that, they're changing things I don't think need to be changed, and it looks like they're saying that Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's father is not actually Magneto.
See, that's unfortunate.
And that they are Inhumans.
That's
and it's
unfortunate.
Just like, well, you didn't have to do that. But I'm okay with, like, fine, give the Inhumans their shot. It's always failed to have any more Inhumans than the royal family. Like, there were those were relaunched 5 years ago. No one remembers those new Inhumans. No one's going to remember these new Inhumans. There's one that's actually called Inferno, whose real name is Dante. I've already forgotten him.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And again, they're playing that in the TV where it's like all these, you know, superhuman people are popping up and then going away and then who cares, so.
But you give me Black Bolt, Lockjaw, and Medusa and I'm down for that.
Lockjaw.
Gorgon. Lockjaw. And Triton and Gorgon and Karnak. And that's about it. Yeah, that's
Crystal.
All I need.
You let that Crystal. Let's not forget Crystal. Yeah, she always gets sidebarred, but, you know, she was having a hot and heavy thing with Johnny Storm there for a while. It was crucial. It was a big part of the Marvel Universe back in the day.
Can't mention that because Fantastic Four is in a different studio.
Yeah. So let's just get a really huge Lockjaw and call it good. Yes?
Yes.
Giant teleporting dog for the win.
Woo! With a tuning fork on his head.
Yes. With a tuning fork on his head.
Wow. All right. Cool. I think we talked about that.
Too far in the weeds there?
No, I love it. I love being in the weeds.
I think we're getting better and better at, like, you know, hiding in the weeds and playing tag for a little bit and then running back out again. I think we should, you know,
and then we randomly pat each other on the back. Him with He-Man, and then he's part of it.
Dude, He-Man. I like He-Man.
Did you know that there is an art of He-Man?
Yeah.
What that came out this week?
It's on the rack right behind
it's
you,
right
brother.
It's right there. Yes.
Put a link to that in the show notes, too. That's an awesome book.
Look at that book. Look at that.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
It even has a little cell from the animation.
It does. I saw that.
Yeah,
I
tried.
It
was really cool.
I was looking at it. Maybe it was like a pop-up
sidebar,
book. I thought maybe there's another little cell of Orko you can just pull across the cell of the Castle Grayskull.
If there was like a paper cutout of Battle Cat, would you just buy that right now?
He probably would.
Are you telling me there's a paper cutout of Battle Cat because you want me to buy that?
No, but Castle Grayskull is what's the word? Illustrated in the book. I'm looking to you like vocabulary.
I don't know what you're. Is it like a pop up? Like
no, it's just
like a die cut,
like a glycel thing.
It's just drawn.
Oh, okay. Oh, they show you the. I know what you're talking about. There's a. They show you all the design work for the toy castle, and the final artwork.
Oh,
yeah.
Eloquently. Thank you.
That's real. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but so I also love. I love.
Should we pass the cup to collect money to buy the book for Ben? He's moving, guys. He's moving. He's going to need a housewarming present. Oh my God! I'm so proud of myself.
You know. Funny thing you mentioned, because I am moving, and I found my old He-Man action figures. I was actually telling Nicole this earlier today, or earlier this week, when I came in to buy a book for our book report section. This is a new segment we're doing. It's what are you reading this week, and do you like it? Would you recommend it? Cole, what are you reading this week?
What am I reading this week? I've been rereading a lot of stuff. And not just this week, but over the last 2 months, I reread all of Neil Gaiman's Sandman because I felt like I need to put my money where my mouth is. I'm meeting lots of young people who are really excited about Neil Gaiman's books, and I will ask, you know, because they've read American Gods or Anansi Boys or his young adult works, and I'm like, well, have you read Sandman? And they're like, no. And then I realize that it's been so long since I've read those stories that I don't really know what I'm endorsing. And I went back and reread them, and they're still marvelous. They're still poetic. They're still exciting. And what I did not realize, because I read them, you know, in the 90s, month to month, was that that Neil Gaiman guy, he's really smart. And he actually had plot threads that he, like, carried through the whole darn 75-issue series. And he had things that he had planned things out from the get-go. So, okay, it's not what I've been reading this week, but it was something that I was excited about rediscovering.
All right, great. Did and you totally recommend Sandman.
Oh, I can't recommend Sandman enough.
I don't know if there's anybody out there who wouldn't. Neil Gaiman is... He seems to hit home runs.
Yeah,
when he does
I just found it surprising that so many people are a fan of his novels and whatnot and have not read that comic.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Nicole. What?
Did you read something this week, though? Was there something specific?
Oh, I always read something.
Ooh, what was it?
Well, why don't we come back to me?
Okay, think
okay,
about it.
Okay, Nicole, what have you read this week?
It's been a Alex DeCampi week for me, which means I've read the new Archie versus Predator.
Yay! AVP.
Although I still disagree that you call it AVP. And that's by Dark Horse. That's published by Dark Horse. And then I've also read No Mercy, which is by Image. And it is drawn by Carla Speed McNeil, who does Finder. It's a big recommendation from Chris. And it's both about horrible things happening to teenagers, but just so delightful at the same time. And I would actually recommend both of them. Very much, yeah.
That Archie gang, they just can't cut a break these days, can they?
It's hilarious.
Zombies and predators.
And then you see some of the covers that are going to come out, and it's almost like Scooby-Doo. Yeah. Like Archie versus Predator in like a Scooby-Doo land where they're like running away and like,
gonna,
oh, Predator.
They're going to pull the mask off of Predator
why,
and it's old man Johnson down.
Yeah. Silly
I could have gotten away with it if it wasn't for your nasty kids.
Pretty much. That's a good old man voice, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's 49.
Aw.
nosy kids.
Chris, I mean, Chris, you read everything, but what do you like this week that you're reading?
I read too much. So I
you
read...
You can never read too much, brother.
Well, it depends what you're reading.
No.
I read published by Dark Horse. It's a graphic novel manga called Seraphim 2661336 Wings. Nowhere in the point in the book did I understand why the numbers were there.
That's but part of the title? That just looks like a barcode number.
Well, but here's the thing. It's an unfinished piece of work because... one of the creators is Satoshi Kon, and he passed away in 2010. So here's the interesting thing. It's a creative effort between Mamoru Oshii and Satoshi Kon. And Oshii directed Ghosts in the Shell and Pat Labor 2. And Satoshi Kon directed Perfect Blue, which is one of the most amazing films, if you ever get a chance. Darren Aronofsky has like a fetish for that film.
These are anime, right?
Yep, and Tokyo Godfathers, Paprika, and Paranoia Agent are all Satoshi Kon. And the thing is, the two guys kind of had a falling out. They didn't finish the piece of work, and then Kon passed away. So it will never, ever be finished. So if that bugs you, you might not want to check it out. But it's a really interesting post-apocalyptic story. Beautiful artwork, and just really fascinating.
Does it give you enough? Is there enough satisfaction at the end of the book to feel like you got your money's worth out of it?
I was satisfied a lot. Cool. The setup is that there's a plague, some virus that hits the world that it first you seem like you're feverish, then you start to hallucinate, but they're like the most fantastic hallucinations ever, and you feel nothing but joy.
And you dance, yes. dance.
That would be great. But then you become
veteran.
Did
you just recently watch Kung Fu Hustle?
No. But some spirit walked into me that had.
Nice.
Floating around here from an earlier podcast, that's all.
Nice. You get bedridden, and then you start growing these things out of your shoulders to start to look like angel wings.
Oh,
and they become these calcified bone things. And you don't see people that have gone too far, because usually they're set on fire and disposed of. But there's a couple corpses out there that have like full-on angel wings. So it's like this big mystery, like, what the hell is this? There's giant birds around the world, and some of the hallucinations are like very angelic. So yeah, it's like a political thriller as well, because it's about like the division of different borders after that kind of disaster.
Cool.
So it's really good.
Cool.
Yeah. Neat. Would you recommend it?
Yes.
Cool.
How about you, Ben
Unless
Lawrence?
You
Have you been reading something?
After all of that.
Yeah. All right. Well, like I said, probably in an earlier podcast, the number of comics that I've read, I could count on one hand, and they're all Batmans from 1989, because that's when the Batman craze hit my household. So I came in a couple days ago, like I said, and asked Chris for a recommendation because I wanted to participate in Book Report as well. And he gave me a couple options, and I chose Letter 44. Now, it's I don't actually know the publisher. Who?
Oni. It's Oni Press.
Oni Press. Okay.
Is that still Kevin Smith's publishing house?
He doesn't do anything with him. But that's where, like, Scott Pilgrim is published.
Yeah, that's okay. The biggest. Yeah.
It's very shiny. In fact, I think that's
so
one of
shiny.
The reasons why I was drawn to it is because it's,
ooh, it looks shiny.
It's you know, I'm like a cat batting at the cover. It's basically, it's a sci-fi political intrigue thriller alien story. It's Letter 44 is the letter that's given to the 44th president on the day of his inauguration. Mm-hmm. And as we all know, Barack Obama is the 44th president. So it's basically, and there are a number of parallels. They're not making any attempt to like hide the fact that this is, you know, probably one guy's one like disappointed progressive's reasoning for why the Obama presidency has been disappointing.
Yeah.
It's because aliens?
Because one of the reasons the
previous president started the wars, which who's, the name I can't remember in the book, but it's, you know, it's Bush, you know,
right.
Is to develop tech to fight these aliens that they discovered 7 years ago. And there's actually, so the book is basically in two parts. There's the political intrigue or the political like dealings with, mm-hmm. with this new president trying to do both sides of his presidency. He wants to maintain this program of making sure the program for the alien exploration is funded, but also doing his domestic agenda and accomplishing that as well. And there are roadblocks along the way. And then also there's the people in the spaceship who are traveling to, and they eventually get to this alien, looks like a mining operation, but they eventually kind of infiltrate it and you find out it's something else. I would recommend it. I did like it. It's very, like, when I read comic books, like a comic book back when I was a kid, mm-hmm. it was, comics were printed on newsprint and you mm-hmm. can see the dots. This mm-hmm. is very fancy. It's very slick. The pages, mm-hmm. the pages are, feel very good in your hands. Mm-hmm. The only there's one thing in the book that I didn't really get. I had to go through and like scan it again. There are like 9 astronauts. Mm-hmm. And at one point in the book, they say, we haven't lost anybody yet. And they eventually, like, one sacrifices himself to save 2 others. But there are, they say, well, there's 7 of us. And they never mention what happened to this 8th astronaut.
Gotta read the second
astronaut.
Book, Ben.
Like, and they kind of mention this person's name. Like, I wish this person were here. And the other one's like, I wish they were here too. And so... like, what happened to that person? So I'm hoping that I can find out.
Story time with Ben Lawrence. I like that.
I like it.
I wish you were here. Anyway, letter 44, check
aliens
it out.
Are here.
And there is a second volume to that.
There is a second volume.
Yeah,
I saw
and
it on the...
it is just as shiny.
It's red shiny.
It's even more shiny. Which, again, I'm basically a cat. I will bat at the shiny thing.
It's like
good
a
to
laser
know.
Pointer.
Man, all right.
It's a good thing to get you
for
Christmas.
Well, we got to get back to Cole.
Oh, Cole, right. You had an addendum.
Just real quick. I read a lot of comics this week. The one that popped in my head was I read the latest Batman and Son, or Batman and Robin, with the resurrected Damian. And the cover is a swipe on Action Comics 1, where Superman is you know, driving the Chevrolet or whatever it is into. It's the really famous cover where he's lifting up the car and driving it into the ground. Well, they swipe on that because, you know, Damian's been resurrected thanks to a combination of his grandfather's Lazarus pit and a trip to Apocalypse and a whole bunch of other things I can't really keep track of. It's really the only Batman book I read right now, which is probably silly because the main Batman title is very good. Is that, who's writing that?
Snyder.
Yeah. And I read the Court of the Owls books and trades, and I was like, oh gosh darn it.
That stuff's a lot of crossovers, though.
Yeah.
And so you're self-contained with Batman. And
maybe that's why subconsciously I made that decision.
And that's more superhero popcorn that I kind of enjoy.
Well, I can do without making Robin a, you know, bulletproof, high-flying superhero. And I know it's a temporary thing, but I still have I've always enjoyed this relationship that he has with his, you know, his genetic son. And that's why I've been reading the book.
And that cover you're talking about is one of my favorite covers because
favorite,
like,
swipes?
Yeah, because like Alfred's
the foreground
screaming. And then
yes.
The dog is in the background. Yeah, it's great.
So that's the one that popped into my head. So
cool. That's Book Report, a segment we'll do every once in a while. And thank you for listening.
Let's do it every week.
Before we go, we of course have to play quiz time. These questions actually are submitted by listener Jeff.
Excellent.
If you want to submit questions for quiz time, you can go ahead and send them to perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And here we go. Okay, these are all first appearances. So I'm going to give you a title and you have to tell me who first appeared in that title. Now, I have no idea if these are right. Again, listener Jeff, I just have to trust that he got all these right. Okay, question number 1. Who first appears in Fantastic Four number 48? There are 2 correct answers to this question. Nicole, you had your hand up first.
Was Galactus in? Was that Galactus?
Yes, Galactus was one.
Of course. Of course she knows that.
Bonus points. Bonus points for the second one, if you know who the second one is.
Oh, over there.
Cole.
But was it perhaps Silver Surfer?
It was the Silver Surfer. All right. Very good. Point shared. Okay, now, question number 2. Who first appeared in Thor number 337? Chris and Cole are both kind of raising their hands.
I'll start, you finish. Beta?
Beta?
Ray?
Bill.
lesbian. Yeah, absolutely.
I except I said beta, you said beta.
Oh, all right. So,
tomato, tomato.
Nicole and Cole are sharing a point. Chris and Cole are now sharing a point. Cole is ahead, one full point to Chris and Nicole's half point
I
each.
I like this, how we split these. This is good, great. Yeah.
All right.
We feel like effort. A family.
We are perfectly bound.
Ooh, and scene.
Okay. Question number three. I feel like I should stop it there, but I got more questions. Question number three. Okay, who first appeared in Tales of Suspense number 39? Tales of Suspense number 39. Cole's hand is on his head. Nicole is kind of waving her hand in a snake-like fashion.
I'm going to say Doctor Strange.
You are going to be wrong. Anybody else? Nicole?
Was it Namor?
Was not Namor.
Oh. Iron Man.
It was Iron
wow!
Man.
Wow! Nice!
Chris just pulled through with Swagger. The lead, 1.5 points.
Nice!
All right, now.
Tony Douchebag Stark.
Oh, easy now. Easy now.
Right. Me Drinky Face Stark.
Question number four. Question
Drinky
number four.
McDrinkerton
Who
Stark.
First appeared in Detective Comics number 38? Detective Comics number 38.
Yes.
Chris is kind of raising his hands. He's thinking about it. He's probably got a photographic memory. He's flipping through the pages right now.
I actually suck at this kind of stuff because I never care, but that's not Robin.
It is Robin.
Oh, well, that's Robin. Okay. Well, Detective has so many people hidden in there, like Slam Bradley, who nobody cares about but me, and Martian Manhunter's Detective Comics. Yeah, so it's just like, but right. That's too high.
Was Batwoman in Detective? I can't remember.
Everyone's from Detective.
Yeah. Did Jeff have the year that came out?
No, he did not.
Oh, okay.
You can look that up.
Of course.
Google that.
Well.
All right, and the fifth and final question. This is kind of a different question than what we've been dealing with so far. It's not a straight up issue. This is, what was the first mainstream comic, non-underground in parentheses, to appear without a comics code in the 1960s? The first mainstream comic to appear without a comics code in the 60s. And bonus points if you can tell me what the issue was.
Wild guess here. I'm not going to get the number, but isn't it like the drug issue of Spider-Man with Green Goblin?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, it's number 96. I don't 96? Know if it's a Green Goblin, but it's a drug issue of Spider-Man.
It's Harry, not Norman, and Harry gets high, and the thing is Stan was mad because he was like, I'm trying to do a book to tell kids not to take drugs, and the Comic Code Authority was just like, but you can't say drugs. He's like, I'm going to do this anyway. You know, something like that.
Cool.
Hypocrisy.
I think the Comics Code of Authority is a topic we should discuss in a future episode because that sounds interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's our show for today. Thank you for listening.
Wait, who won?
I don't know. You all win.
We all won.
We all win.
Chris,
we're
I think
all
you
winners. We're the all winners squad. Yay.
I think Chris, you get 2.5 points. Cole has 1.5, and Nicole has a half point.
I got the Galactus.
On the board with a half point. Yes. Okay, anyway, that's our show. Thank you for listening. If you want to find out more about us, you can, of course, go to perfectboundpodcast.com. You can email us, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find out more about The Panel Jumper at thepaneljumper.com. And, of course, you can come to the Comics Dungeon here in Wallingford, 319 Northeast 45th Street. They turned part of the lights off. We tried turning all the lights off, but it was just too dang dark.
Podcasting in the night.
We need flameless candles or something.
Flameless. too much battery power. Anyway, that's our show. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.